Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver, and this, the last show before the summer vacation of our show's producer, Hunter Reese. Hunter, headed back to North Carolina. Where in North Carolina, Hunter?
Granite Falls.
Granite Falls, North Carolina. Certainly a wonderful place to be from. And we have dedicated this show to Hunter. We are, in fact, calling this the Good Wittens to Bad Wubbish Show, a direct quote from Elmer Fudd. Thanks to our listeners at True Talk Internet Radio. And here, an example of bad wubbish on the air.
But good wittance.
From the University of Kentucky, Manager of Communications Infrastructure, Rick Phillips, to explain to you how you can get more bad wubbish from our website.
Hey, the station manager would not like to hear you say that. So I would suggest everybody go to WMKY.org and admire that wonderful website. Everything there from Moorhead State Public Radio, all the shows. We'd say find Health Matters. Go to that site. What you'll find is a listing of our most recent shows. There's a summary there in case you really want to know what we're going to say, although they don't really give you the full effect of Health Matters. You really got to click on the link and listen to it.
Yeah, you just can't get stupid over a Facebook page.
Well, you can only get a degree of stupid.
Yeah.
We give we're a four-dimensional stupid.
There is nothing like radio stupid.
We're stupider, right?
That's right.
See what I did? I cracked you up. See, it's funny. I wished you all could see Tony in the studio.
You remember our heroes, the car talk guys,
right?
Click and Clack. They had one time a guy wrote into the show and he said, you know, the question is, do two people together, are they more stupid than one person? He said, the writer said, I thought that you would moderate the stupid of each other because one of you would have more sense than the other. He said, but together you people augment each other's stupid to the point that you are together more stupid than either one of you is alone. And I've always aspired to get to that level of stupid on Health Matters.
Oh, but Tony, come on. I mean, we've talked about this over the years numerous times. Despair.com, right? The demotivational posters, right?
Yep.
Meetings, my favorite, because none of us are as dumb as all of us. Right?
Come
and so here we are. We're at a Health Matters meeting right now, and we are, well, let's just say, if you want to interact with us, leave that whole Moorhead State Public Radio website. Go over to Facebook. Let's find out how stupid we can all be together. Right? That's where you interact with us. Drop us some show comments, some show suggestions, topics of the day, maybe something interesting comes across the wire. Somebody dropped a snake on us the other day. It was pretty cool. So anyway, follow there at facebook.com/HMRadioShow.
Our sponsor, the Zika Virus Fun Facts. Cue the music, Maestro. The CDC, they wish to speak. Avoid mosquitoes and don't get Zika. Now, wasn't that just a moment of relaxation? Didn't you love that, Rick?
No.
Okay.
No, I really didn't. And really, frankly, I'm ready for Zika to go away for many reasons, but that's the first reason.
Right. And there's the first question. Is Zika, in fact, going to go away? This is a disease set up. Now, this show...
You like Zika.
From the start, we were skeptical of Ebola. If you remember...
You're a Zika.
We never thought that the United States would have a significant problem with Ebola. Now, that's a decision. I mean, obviously, I wasn't in charge of the CDC or disaster planning, but we spent billions preparing
with
for Ebola. Yeah. And matter of fact, the local hospitals prepared for an Ebola event and so forth. And that it was a good thing to do in terms of getting ready for a virus, but not, in our opinion, for Ebola. And it turned out we just fortunately were right on that. Zika bothers me. Zika is now entrenched in the Caribbean area. The mosquitoes that carry Zika are along our own Gulf Coast. They have the potential habitat range to move up to Kentucky. And a lot of projections feel that Zika virus will go up the East Coast. Zika virus also, this virus has a predilection for nerve cells, and particularly in the fetus, in the unborn baby, it goes to those cells that are in charge of making the baby's brain, and it corrupts them into making virus. It more or less shuts down the brain development, and that's the microcephaly. We now have mechanisms on this, and they are ugly. The other thing, there's something called Guillain-Barré. It's where this is something that we've seen after some vaccinations. infections or some viral illnesses, a person gets paralysis that starts in the legs and ascends up the spinal cord. And in many cases, they have to be on a breathing machine, and it generally passes on its own. But it's an inflammatory condition that ascends up the spinal cord. Zika, because it loves nerve cells, can create that type of inflammation. So this Guillain-Barré thing happens more often with Zika as well. This is a really, really nasty virus. Chikungunya, a lot of pain, very unlikely to kill you. Zika, also unlikely to kill you, but unfortunately, a lot of nerve damage. And I think long-term, we're still assessing that. There's not, right now, a vaccine, although we're working on it. We're also working on interrupters, things that may be able to block it from doing some of the worst damage it does. But we've got a long way to go. In the meantime, I will tell you in all seriousness, if you are a pregnant woman, I would not travel in the Caribbean. I just simply would not travel in the Caribbean pregnant, and I think you have to look very hard at going to the Gulf Coast. Now, we may get some, we might actually get something from a tourism commission. You know, we got that Florida grapefruit people got onto us about a year ago about this, about our thoughts on grapefruit and their interactions with drugs. It may very well be that a tourism commission writes us, but honestly, if I or someone I love were pregnant, I would tell them not to go to the Gulf Coast during their pregnancy. It's not there yet. It has not been reported to be transmitted to humans in the U.S. Gulf Coast. However, we feel that it might be coming, and you do not want to make medical history by traveling to the Gulf Coast, and you and your unborn child are the first people affected by this virus. This, again, a nasty virus. It could still stay in the Caribbean and South America area, but honestly, there's no reason necessarily that it should. All we've got to do is get enough people infected with it, and the mosquitoes bite them and they start transmitting it here.
I mean, isn't it ultimately going to find its way onto a cruise ship with 5,000 people? And
The discouraging thing about the Aedes aegypti mosquito is it likes to bite indoors. This is not something that you have to go deep into the swamps to find this virus. It's probably hanging out at your back door.
Well, I mean, it likes air conditioning as much as us, right?
Well, it likes shady places, and it does not mind at all hanging out around your house. And so all these things where we're spraying, again, out in the community, those are fine, but it the most likely place that you're going to find the mosquito that carries Zika is, in fact, right around your screen porch, your back door, in the shady part of your house. That's our sponsor, Zika Virus Fun Facts. We didn't even get to any fun facts because there weren't many fun facts, but let's roll the music anyway. The CDC, they wish to speak, avoid mosquitoes and don't get Zika. Our sponsor, Zika Virus Fun Facts. All right, Rick, let's go to snakes in a hospital.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm going to read this verbatim.
Can we not?
I will read it verbatim, and then we will tell you the real story. Not that we know the real story, but we can make it up. This is from the reporter was Ayla Ellison. I first ran into it on something called Becker's Hospital Review, one of the many news sources I get. Here it is, verbatim. A white ball python has been reunited with its owner after the snake went missing inside the Tacoma, Washington General Hospital, according to a TV report. Sources tell the TV station the visitor snuck. They actually use the word snuck, and so I'm already liking this. Snuck the snake.
How do they spell that?
S-N-U-C-K-S-N-A-K-E. They snuck the snake into the hospital inside a cat carrier full of stuffed animals.
Why would you do that?
While the snake's owner was in the hospital. When the owner went home from the hospital, he realized the python had escaped the carrier and immediately notified Tacoma General. The reptile was found about a month later when it came out of the ceiling ventilation on April 30th. A spokesman confirmed the owner of the python had taken the snake home. And then they have a few facts about pythons if we want to know that. Now, let me just say,
oh my goodness,
whatever happened, that was not the way this happened. Okay. First of all, this is the wrong state. You know yourself, there is one state in the United States where people bring pythons into hospitals. It is not Kentucky, and it is not Washington, not Tacoma, Washington.
Florida.
It is Florida. It absolutely is. The guy's name, I can already tell you, it was Dwayne. Many of you people in the North know it's Dwayne, but in fact, Dwayne was either the guy that snuck the snake in or the guy who's there. And, you know, this thing is so dry. It's as if, well, the bank president was in the hospital, and many of the people of the city council thought he might like to see his pet python. No, no, no. We know that that's not so. Now, they snuck the snake inside a cat carrier full of stuffed animals. Is that not devious?
That's devious.
And you think to yourself, well, I'm the nurse or I'm the doctor, and this guy walks by with a cat carrier full of stuffed animals. What a bizarre thing to do. The other thing, they said he went home from the hospital and realized it had escaped. Now,
Uh-oh.
Oh, my gosh. I'm serious. I just checked this python right as I was leaving, but apparently, while I was receiving my discharge medications, he somehow... No, I am certain that this guy was looking all over his room for this python.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
Yeah, let's get to the real story here.
I mean, as soon as he picked up the carrier, empty, not empty.
Yeah, a python. This was a big
python. Well, we saw the picture. Yeah, we saw the picture. It was, you know, white... It was
not
albino.
Inconsequential size snake. One that one would immediately notice. The idea that he gets home and he says, oh my gosh, by logical reasoning, I deduce that this snake did not escape in my car or on the stairwell. This, in fact, was in the hospital. No, I'm sorry. That was not the story. Even though it sounds really good, this is nothing like the story. The other thing that's kind of interesting, Rick, I know what would happen to you if the python dropped from the ceiling in your room. My question, this happened, not this, but something similar happened. I was at a hospital in another state. I was receiving my training, and a patient called the nurse's station and said he saw bugs on the wall. We went into the room, and there were, in fact, bugs on the wall. It was springtime, and there was a swarm. I think it was ants or something like that, but this guy saw bugs on the wall. So the question is, if you're in the hospital, you may be sick, you may be taking new medications, and you see a snake drop out of the ceiling.
I'm gone.
Yeah,
I'm
I know you're
That's
gone.
It. I'm up.
Yeah, but I'm thinking, okay, is this a real snake, or is this my medication?
Exactly.
You're not going to wait to see.
No.
You're saying, whatever it is,
I'm out.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, if it's the medication, I'm more than out.
I'm
out. Not coming back.
I vote with my feet. If I'm an employee, I quit.
I understand.
If it's my house, I put it up for sale. I mean, there's all kinds of ways to handle this problem.
Right. And this thing, so first of all, that's an interesting thing. What do you do when you see a snake come out of the ceiling in the hospital? Maybe you think, I probably need some medicine adjusted. Maybe I'll just let the nurse know I would like an extra pill. The other thing that's fascinating to me is that this story, as it is written, I don't know if the writer knew this or not, but this makes no sense as it is written. This is whatever happened in that hospital. This is not.
No. And this is a clear, we don't really think anything close to the truth is going to help the hospital in any way, shape, or form. So let's just get away with the bare minimums.
When the owner went home, he immediately realized the python had escaped the carrier and notified the hospital. Oh, please. But you'll like this next one. I know we don't have much time.
We never have enough time with you.
I know. But let me set it up.
How about I just shut up and let you talk?
Well, that's no fun. I need the reaction. I need you to do the dumb reaction so that I can correct you.
You're out of time.
I'm not giving me much credit here. Let me just set this up for next fractional portion.
I was going to let you do all the talking.
This was a case report in the journal, British Medical Journal Case Reports. It was in May about paintball-related liver injury. We're going to talk about it more in our second fractional portion. How can you leave your seat knowing we're going to bring this up in our second fractional portion? But
you're
going to
shoot your liver out.
You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio. Stay tuned.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. We are sending off our student producer.
Good Widdance.
Good Widdance, the bad wubbish for Hunter Reese, our student producer, who is headed back to his home state of North Carolina, Granite Falls to be more specific.
Good Widdance.
And we wish him well for the summer, and he'll be back in the fall. Our sponsor for the second time, Zika Virus Fun Facts. Cue the music, maestro.
Oh, no. I've been trying to ignore this.
The CDC, they wish to speak of, avoid mosquitoes and don't get Zika. You know, I just love that. I think that makes the show when we, I know. All right. Anyway, we're going to do our fun facts now. Fun fact number one, Zika virus is a flavivirus. This is like dengue and chikungunya, and it then has a similar range. Dengue did make it to the United States. Chikungunya did not, although it was in the Caribbean. And that's the question. When, if Zika virus will, in fact, start spreading among people in the United States, particularly the Gulf Coast area. Some projections have it going up the East Coast and reaching population centers in the Northeast. The Aedes aegypti mosquitoes have that kind of range. Fun fact number 2. It is spread by Aedes aegypti mosquitoes. They're primarily found in Latin America, also in the U.S. They bite mostly during daytime. They bite mostly indoors or around houses. If you are traveling to an area of active Zika infection, avoid mosquito bites at all costs. Insect repellents, DEET, Picaridin, and IR3535, they are safe, and they are particularly safe for use during pregnancy. You can put DEET on your skin during pregnancy. It is much safer than the alternative. Fun fact number 3, infections through sex and blood transfusions are possible. Men with a pregnant partner who live in or have traveled to an area of Zika virus should use condoms during sex for the duration of the pregnancy. That is, if your partner is pregnant and if you travel to an area where Zika is being transmitted, Latin America, South America at the present time, they recommend barrier methods during the entire pregnancy. Don't take a chance with your unborn child. Fun fact number 4, symptoms usually mild. 80% of people don't even know they have Zika virus. There are no symptoms. You go to Latin America, you get infected, you bring it back, you have sex with your partner who is pregnant, you don't even know you have it, and they get it, and the baby gets it. Symptoms, fever, joint aches, rash, and conjunctivitis. Again, 20% of the time that happens. Fun fact number 5, all pregnant women consider postponing travel to areas in which the transmission of Zika virus remains active. Again, Central and South America. But at Health Matters, we are worried about the Gulf Coast. If you or someone you love is pregnant, you've got to think very hard about whether or not you want to take that summer vacation along the Gulf Coast where the possibility of Zika spread is there. And certainly, the Summer Olympics are off limits for people who are pregnant or are thinking about becoming pregnant. And remember, but the fact that it stays so long in the male sexual organs means that if your boyfriend, if your husband goes to one of these areas, including going to the Olympics, then 6 months still could be transmitted. That's our sponsor, Zika virus. Roll the tape, please. The CDC, they wish to speak, avoid mosquitoes and don't get Zika. All right, Rick.
You feel better now?
I do. I dearly love that sponsor. British Medical Journal Case Reports, 2016.
Is this what we kind of led everybody to?
Traumatic liver injury. An 18-year-old man presented.
Wait. What'd you just say?
An 18-year-old boy.
You said man.
I said 18-year-old man. That was what the article said.
So what do you think it is?
I think it's a man at age 18.
18's a man, huh?
Well, if you can fight for your country, right? That's what we always said.
Okay.
Are you disagreeing with an 18-year-old as a man?
Well, I did kind of serve my military or my country in the military, and I was 18, but
right.
Boy, I certainly wasn't. I was still learning that whole man thing.
At the time you did that, did you think you were a man?
Well, I have an out here because I actually was started before I was 18, so... But nonetheless, yes.
All right. He presented to the hospital with signs and symptoms consistent with appendicitis. That is, he had a very tender abdomen. When you even just touched it, it was very tender. And I'm sure if someone shook the bed or something like that, that caused him a great deal of pain. That's what you get with appendicitis. Now, when that happens, we can run x-rays and scans, but essentially an 18-year-old that comes in with those symptoms, we're going to do an operation.
Right.
And many times we may take out a normal appendix. I say we.
20% of the time.
Yeah. The surgeons do. I don't, but the surgeons do. They take out a normal appendix, and that's just part of being sure
that you,
miss an infected appendix. Well, they went in to do the surgery, and instead of a hot appendix, they found a liver injury. They found a lacerated, bleeding liver, and so they actually packed the liver to try to get the bleeding to stop, and then went back in and 48 hours later just to make sure that this guy wasn't going to bleed to death.
See, and the thing is when you say the word lacerated, when I hear the word lacerated, I think sharp object slicing through something.
Sure.
Right? This is not what happened.
No, the liver has a capsule around it, and the skin of that capsule was broken, and so there were tears in it. Maybe torn would be better than...
Yeah, but it does say lacerated. It's not like lacerated. You're making that word up.
No, I mean, it was there.
I'll give you credit here. I mean, yeah. You're not... But I just... It's funny, because you hear that, and you think, well, how on earth did his liver get cut? And then you realize, wait a minute, we started this off with something paintball?
Yeah. Well, there you go. So he comes in with these symptoms, and obviously he doesn't mention the paintball part, but after he woke up from surgery, he had taken part in a paintball game 2 days before, and he was hit twice on his lower right-hand side, which is the area of the liver, and that apparently resulted in blunt traumatic injury. That is, you know, you can basically, if you're in a car
wreck, you're going to shoot your liver out.
Yeah. You love that, don't you?
Well, I mean, I'm a big Christmas Story guy. You're going to shoot your eye out. I just can't get past that.
So they look back at 48 hours, no further bleeding. They send him home. But 3 weeks after the injury, there was a big, they call it a hematoma, big pocket of blood around the liver that didn't seem to be resolving. So they put him back in the hospital. It didn't get any bigger. And so they let him go, and he would seem to be doing better at 3 months. As far as these people know, this was the first paintball-related traumatic injury to the liver. It has been reported the kidneys. You shoot somebody in the back, the kidneys are actually closer to the back. You can do damage to the kidneys with a paintball gun. The idea, though, that you can shoot things at each other, even if it's paintballs, and just walk away from it. Admittedly, most paintball games don't end in surgery. But still, this was, I don't know how far away it was, but apparently somebody on the other team had a very, very powerful paintball gun, is what I figured. This was, I had to go back.
You think they have it had it overclocked? To use a term from the IT business.
Sure. And I'll
just throw that out there for you, Tony.
By definition, yes. If you
back
put somebody
when we were
in
kids,
the hospital.
When we were kids, what we would have said would have been souped up.
Yep.
See, but nowadays it's overclocked.
Okay. So you overclocked gun. Well, by definition they did because they clocked him. Destroyed his liver. So,
they clocked him, all right.
That's true. I found back in 2004 in a journal called Injury Prevention, Injuries from Paintball Game Related Activities, 1997-2001. That's the most recent one I could find. And this was hospitals using the National Electronic Injury Surveillance System. They found 12,000 people over age 7 with paintball game related injuries treated in emergency departments over a 4-year period. Average rate of about 5 per 10,000 paintball participants. Highest among 18 to 24-year-olds. Most injuries among males. No surprise there. Can't do anything right, I guess. 60% of injured persons were treated for pellet wounds, most of them to the eye. 3/4 ages 7 to 17 for wounds. Most of these, interesting enough, once you get to over age 18, most of the injuries are overexertion or fall. They're from running away.
I would think being out of shape.
Probably so, but I'm thinking the kids just sit there and paintball each other till somebody gets an eye injury, whereas the adults run away till somebody trips and sprains their ankle. That's basically.
Or they're chasing somebody who shot them when they shouldn't have.
That's how they did. And I will say, when I was growing up, we played hide-and-go-seek after dark with flashlights, and the game ended, I will never forget this, when Ricky ran into a tree. He just full bore ran into a tree. It was pitch black.
Not me.
Yeah, we were chasing him. No, not Ricky, not Rick, but my cousin Ricky. We were chasing him, and he ran full bore into a tree, and that was the
end of the fancy.
Tree was fine. Ricky a little bit bloodied, and game over. And of course, we got a good talking to from our parents, who sent us out there in the dark to play games anyway.
But come on, that's the best way to play that game.
I guess so.
In the dark. I mean, come on, that's just great. Flashlight. Yeah,
it's pretty fun because you catch somebody may not necessarily mean that you know who you caught.
Well, and I was that idiot that played. We did what they did with paintball with BB guns. Right. So I was one of those idiots.
Eye protection? Heavens no.
I had my eye protection cracked at least once. Once that I remember actually cracked. I remember getting hit several times, but it actually cracked. And all of a sudden, you hear a click, and you look up, and there's a crack in front of your eye. It's pretty scary.
That close.
I actually had to go to the hospital once to have one taken out of my ear. It actually, one shot went in the side of my ear and actually embedded.
I did not know this. So how often were you playing?
We played all through maybe the summer or two through high school.
These were grown boys with BB guns.
Yes. Pump ones.
And
pump guns.
So hopefully
you can. We had a rule. You shouldn't have been able to pump more than 2 or 3 times. I forget what it was.
Right.
And we had people who souped up their pump gun.
Let's face it. You can. At that point, you become a sharpshooter.
Well, the BB gun's trajectory is much straighter. In other words, you can control the accuracy so much better the more you pump it, right?
So they were, in fact, doing you a favor by accurately shooting you.
No. I think what's going on here is they wanted to make sure they hit their target, but it actually would cause, in some cases, if you're hitting the right spot, it would actually embed in the skin.
Right. I would assume some bruises, some soft tissue injuries.
No, I never had anything like that, but I did have the one time. And really, it was more of a joke gone bad. We were all kind of splitting up to go off on our little teams, and they all kind of picked our team as the one to pick on, and so everybody started firing at us, and somebody got above the we tried to stay below the waist, but somebody got too high and it actually went in my ear, and actually of course that just like the tree situation, right, with Ricky,
right?
Shoot Rick in the ear, game over.
Right.
Because then we're going to the hospital.
Nothing like.
I actually have an x-ray, Tony. I actually have an x-ray of the BB in my ear. It shows my head, you know, with my ear with literally a round dot. Well, it's actually nothing on the x-ray film. You know, it's just.
No, BBs, they do.
But it's very specific. You can see this BB on the x-ray.
And how old was young Rick?
Well, I was 14 or 15. I don't know.
Practically a man, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, right. There we go. Therein lies the issue. I was a solid decision maker back then.
My God. Never did that through hedge apples. You know what hedge apple is?
No.
This is a thing the size
but
of
I
a
can imagine they hurt.
It's rock hard.
I can imagine they hurt.
Well, the whole game was predicated on the fact that no one could ever hit anybody because it was too big.
Well, I was going to say, this sounds like a wintertime snowball fight without winter.
Yeah, right. It's like throwing watermelons at each other.
Yeah.
And the neat thing is they come in so slow, you figure you can always get out of the way.
A grapefruit, right? You got to toss a grapefruit.
Oh, and we reminisce about, you know.
You brought it up.
I know, vintage
but
stupid.
I mean, what do you do when you give a guy a gun that's paint?
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to bring out the inner middle schooler in them.
Right. And if I can find a way to make my paintball gun 10 feet longer range than yours, then I win the game.
I lacerate my kidney or my liver. Game over.
Well, in fact, it wasn't over. He did not know it till 2 days later when he had to go to the hospital. What a mess. Okay, we're done. Next up, once again, I mentioned my mind was blown several times. I think I mentioned that last week.
Better
I was
than
at
your
a conference. And this was not part of the conference. It was just something I saw in Science Translational Medicine published again, it's been now probably 2 weeks ago, a smart tissue autonomous robot. Now, Rick, you know about the Da Vinci robot. The Da Vinci robot is something we're using some in surgery. You insert your hands into these handhold things, and this thing has robotic arms, and you will move the arm, and the arm will stay exactly where you put it as long as you need it there. It doesn't get tired. It doesn't start shaking later in the surgery, and you can do very fine manipulative efforts using these Da Vinci arms. The problem is we've not really shown an advantage. Now, we think as people get better with Da Vinci, eventually the surgeons will be better with it than without it because it is steady and doesn't get tired.
Sure, but Da Vinci's been around a long time.
It has. Well, this is the next step up from Da Vinci.
Is this the Tesla of Da Vinci's?
Well, it's something called STAR, a smart tissue autonomous robot. And what it does is it closes the surgical wound.
Really?
Basically, yeah. When you make the initial cut for surgery, you make marks on each side to help this thing line up. It lines up, and then you let it go, and it will stitch faster and more accurately than you would do closing by hand. So you do whatever, and again, you can use a Da Vinci robot or whatever to do the surgery, but when it's time to close the skin, you just activate this smart tissue autonomous robot or STAR, and it stitches everything up.
So I would assume you have to put like it over the wound and the start and the end. And, you know, every wound is different size and shape. How in the world does it follow along on a 4-inch, you know, half moon shape versus a 3-inch straight line? That sounds intriguing. I'm going to have to go pull a video on that because this is something you brought out of thin air. So I've not seen this thing yet.
Right. They've done it in animals. They did it in pig tissue. They had it stitched bowel together. And that's a tough thing to stitch together. No leakage. A tighter anastomosis, a tighter joining of the bowels than humans would do if they did it. And they also had it stitch skin together. And then they actually did the surgery on the pigs and let it do the closure after the surgery. And all the pigs lived. There were no complications there. They estimate that it'll be ready for use in operating rooms probably within 2 to 3 years, assuming that they can get a commercial partner and push that through the FDA. It is a big step beyond the Da Vinci robots. Again, the Da Vinci robots are going to be doing the actual surgery. This is more of a closing type of robotic system. But the thing is, Da Vinci robots are still the surgeon. The surgeon is just manipulating some arms.
Right, right.
This thing right here, you don't walk away from it. You don't walk out of the OR, but you watch while it does the work. You are actually not doing the closure. Supervised autonomy is what they call it.
So at some point, maybe not this show, maybe in the show and some shows in the future, I spent a few weeks out west and I actually drove down the 101 between San Francisco and San Jose and I looked up.
Did you know the way?
Yes, I did.
Good.
And I did it several times, so I really know the way now.
Okay.
I've been there many times, but I'm... Imagine yourself, Tony, you're driving down the road. It's four lanes or five lanes of traffic. You're over in the HOV lane because you got somebody with you.
Right, because you're not cheating. You wouldn't fake the HOV.
Absolutely. So you're going down through the HOV lane, and you look over, and there to your right is this beautiful, sleek, all-electric car. And you look at the driver, and you realize the driver is reading the newspaper.
In fact, you have experienced a driverless car.
It wasn't driverless.
Okay, but
it was autonomous.
Autonomous.
And it would stay in its lane. Radar would keep it from getting too close to the car in front of it, and it would not, you know. So I mean, it would completely stay in its lane, and the driver was reading the newspaper.
All right, I've got a question for you, because I want to know what your innermost workings here. I see those robots at the University of Kentucky. They're delivery robots,
right? In healthcare,
I can't help it. I step in front of them. I want to see if they stop.
They do.
Yeah, they do. They're very good at that.
The thing is, they're a turtle. They're slow and steady, but they always get where they're going.
They always go. Now, the question is, when you saw that car, didn't you want to pull over and see if it would react?
No.
Didn't you want to mess with it?
No.
You did not want
to? I wanted to buy it.
Okay, but I know, but I get in front of it and hit the brakes. I would want to see how this thing
works.
That's
just mean, Tony.
No, it's not.
You'd want to shoot it in the liver.
It's being a scientist. It's being a scientist. It's chucking a
Why don't you just move over? Why don't you move over and try to get into its lane next to it and see what it does?
No. And did you observe the other traffic? Do people just ignore these things? Because I would be fascinated by it. I would drive along beside it. I would move over and see what it did.
I really don't know how. I only saw one with a newspaper, but I commuted that. I made that commute for 7 or 8 days, right? And every time on the commute, you could count between 10 and 20 Teslas on the road. They are so prevalent out there now that it's unbelievable. So I don't know how many people were using the feature. I saw one with my own eyes. Pretty amazing stuff.
Yeah, you know, around here, I think they just shoot it. I mean... just to see if it, you know, you could kill the thing. I don't know. I am curious enough about it that I would have to see how it reacted to stuff. I'm not sure I could leave it alone.
Well, that's you.
I know.
But if you went to sleep, you know, you wouldn't have to worry about it.
Oh, I would love to be in one. Absolutely. The idea that I could sleep on my way on a commuter.
Here's the deal. I've had a fascination with Tesla for a long time, right? But it's just too pricey. I mean, the fact is, it's just too much vehicle, too much money at this point in time. Now, they obviously got the cheaper model, you know, coming out.
Yeah. I think our roads are different as well. I mean,
but I would love to try that autonomous
roads.
But it's interstates. You know, they banned it in the city. You can't do that in the city. You can only do it on the freeways.
Gotcha.
So
you drive it in the city and it drives itself on the interstate?
Well, you put it into lane autonomous mode, and so it maintains its position in the lane. That's what it does.
Our recommendation for our radio fans, why don't you go into autonomous mode, because we're going to take a break and come back with our third and final fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State.
Don't you shoot your liver out.
MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. That's right, 20 minutes until we say our final summer farewell.
Good riddance.
To our student producer, Hunter Reese. And this is, in fact, the Good Riddance to Bad Wubbish show, quoting Elmer Fudd and wishing him well as he descends to North Carolina for his summer vacation.
Hunter, I came up with the good riddance, and he came up with the bad wubbish.
That's right. You know who your friends are. Our sponsor for the final time, Zika Virus Fun Facts. Cue the music, maestro. The CDC, they wish to speak, avoid mosquitoes and don't get Zika. Oh, thank you very much. That just makes my heart sing. And we've got our top 10 Zika virus fun facts. We'll try to get through every one of them. It is a flavivirus like dengue and chikungunya. Chikungunya particularly was last year's disease, still present, but not making the headlines that it did before. It is spread by the Aedes aegypti mosquitoes, primarily found in Latin America, but also in the U.S., and their range includes Kentucky. As a matter of fact, they go just south of the Great Lakes. It is possible to get an Aedes aegypti mosquito. Currently, it has not been spread
from mosquito to person in the U.S., but we are expecting the Gulf Coast that may occur. Insect repellents containing dipicaridin and IR3535 are safe for use during pregnancy. Please, 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 if you're going to be in mosquito area, if you're going, certainly if you're going to Central America, South America, if you're going to the Caribbean area, if you are going along the Gulf Coast of the United States, I recommend that you take every, well, if you're pregnant, just don't, please don't go. If you are not pregnant, make an effort to try to avoid mosquitoes. Infections through sex and blood transfusions are possible. If a man travels to an area of Zika transmission, he should use condoms during sex with his partner or abstain from sex for the duration of the pregnancy. Think about that, men. If you have a partner who is pregnant, it may be a long time before you have sex with that person again if you want to travel to Central America. Number four, symptoms usually mild. 80% of people don't have symptoms. Those symptoms include fever, joint aches, rash, and itchy eyes. They last less than a week. Hospitalization is rare. It is rare that it kills you. Fun fact number five, pregnant women consider postponing travel to areas in which transmission of Zika virus remains active. Again, Central America, Caribbean area, South America, and we have not yet heard word from the Gulf Coast of the United States, but we expect that's where it will make landfall, if indeed it does. Fun fact number six, if you have Zika virus disease, wait at least 8 weeks before attempting conception. If you're a woman, men with Zika virus disease, documented Zika virus disease, should wait at least 6 months after symptom onset to attempt conception. So it can hide in a man's diaper area for, you know, they're worried it might hide for several months. They recommend do not try to get your partner pregnant for 6 months after you know you have a Zika virus infection. Fun fact number seven, exposure but no clinical illness. Wait at least 8 weeks to attempt conception. So if you went to a Zika area, didn't have any symptoms at all, wait at least 8 weeks. Fun fact number eight, your doctor should be asking anyone who is pregnant about recent travel. This is a nasty disease we need to know. Only women with symptoms within 2 weeks of travel should be tested, though, for the Zika virus. Fun fact number nine, there are no commercially available tests. That is, you cannot get this test at a clinic. It's got to go to a state lab currently. And number 10, no treatment beyond supportive care. The outlook overall for the mother is good. There are occasionally people who have something called Guillain-Barré, but that's rare. But for the baby, this is devastating. The very cells that are supposed to grow your baby's brain wind up spewing out virus instead, and the brain doesn't grow, and it is an awful thing to have happen. It is worth taking extra precautions, and we'll see. Maybe it won't make landfall in the U.S. We are much more worried about this, frankly, based on what we are seeing, than we were about Ebola here at Health Matters. We are not in charge of a national disaster response, so we can pick and choose our disasters, and we think this one might actually turn out to be something bad. That's our sponsor, the Zika virus. The CDC, they wish to speak, avoid mosquitoes and do not get Zika. All right, next up, Rick, there is a sea change happening in the United States. Want to make you aware of it. This was from J. Michael McGinnis, kind of guy you would trust, a guy named J. Michael McGinnis. He is at the Institute of Medicine, and he was talking about the causes of preventable deaths. Now, for many years, and I had a UK professor, we were putting together a lecture, and he said, well, everybody knows that the leading cause of preventable death in the United States is smoking. Okay. That's what we had always heard. That's what I've heard my entire life, but it has changed. The percent of early deaths, that is deaths occurring before age 80, linked to tobacco use, fell from 17% to 15% of all early deaths between 1990 and 2010, and the percent of early deaths attributed to poor diet and lack of exercise increased from 14% to 18% by 2010. So we've got 18% of early deaths before age 80 now caused by poor diet, lack of exercise. Meanwhile, 15% of those early deaths caused by smoking. Smoking now the second leading cause nationally of early death. Now, in the state of Kentucky, with our smoking rates, it is still far and away the leading cause of early death. No doubt about it.
Okay.
But nationwide, second leading cause, the world is changing. Second world-changing idea. You'll like this one, Rick.
No, I won't.
Yes, you will.
No,
I promise you will. This was the AMA Journal.
I don't like it already.
What's wrong with the AMA Journal? It's the American Medical Association Journal.
Oh, that one. I'm sorry. You're right. That one.
Okay. This was May 11th, 2016. The ideal body mass index, BMI, has actually changed, and it has increased. The ideal, the one that allows you to live the longest, has increased. And we're not sure what happened, but let me just give you the numbers first, and then we'll talk about it. This was a Swedish study. They looked at the Copenhagen Michigan City Heart Study between 1976 and present. That's about 20,000 people. And a Copenhagen General Population Study, that's about 97,000 people. And they followed those from the 1970s all the way up to 2014. And they watched to see, they had a questionnaire that said, well, what do you weigh? How tall are you? So we'll figure out your BMI. And then they watched to see who dies and who doesn't die. 120,000 body mass index measurements were taken. And in all the groups, a low body mass index, people who were extremely thin, people who were extremely fat, they had a higher mortality risk. The body mass index with the lowest mortality risk in 1970s was 23.7. That's thin. That would be, most of us would not meet that.
No.
By 2014, the body mass index with the lowest mortality shifted from 23 to 27.
Nice.
That is technically overweight.
Right, because I was thinking 30 was like morbidly obese.
30 is obese, not morbidly.
Well, it used to be morbidly, though.
Yeah, but 25 to 30 would be overweight, and yet that is the best, the ideal body mass index. Now, why? Oh, and one other thing. Those who had a body mass index of 30 or greater versus those who were 18 to 25, in other words, very, again, obese versus very thin people, they had essentially the same mortality outcomes. And so we had always said, oh, you've got to get as thin as possible. It turns out, it looks like, at least by 2013, 2014, that's not necessarily so. Now, why is a matter of speculation. Perhaps we've changed who gets fat and who gets thin. Most of us are fat, so the ones who are thin are abnormal now, whereas before they were normal. The other possibility, it may be that people were dying of heart disease. Now, we know as you get heavier, you have a higher risk of cancer. Before, when you got fatter, you had a higher risk of heart disease, but that may no longer be so. Heart disease rates have been dropping, and we may be able to manage high blood pressure and other risk factors better so that that doesn't matter. But for whatever reason, now a body mass, according to this study, it was a European study, but it was very well done. It looks like a body mass index in the 27 range may be ideal, which takes a little bit of pressure off of us. We don't have to get down below 25.
Who do we got to petition to get it up to 35? I mean, really? Can we do that?
Well, it's certainly shifting. I guess it's like the Earth's North Pole. You know, eventually it's going to get way away from where it is now. So who knows? You might, if you live long enough, ironically, you might be the body mass index that lives the longest.
I'm just sorry,
Saturday morning, and to come out with that kind of profundity on Saturday morning, it just doesn't seem right.
Don't
it?
Use those big words.
I'm just saying.
Oh, yeah, you're just saying.
Okay, but isn't it fascinating? I mean, our leading preventable cause of death has now changed. And what we're seeing, I think, Kentucky, we're still losing 7,700 people a year to smoking-related illness, 3,500 to lung cancer. I mean, there will be the echoes of our infatuation with tobacco will last for a long, long time. But eventually it will end. Eventually, we will not be the people who die more often than other people. If we provide decent health care, if nothing else takes tobacco's place, then obesity, we're going to be in the top 10, but we're not going to be number one as we have been with tobacco-related illnesses. And in the same way, as we get better at treating some of the complications of obesity, as lifestyle changes, as the majority of our people actually have a higher average weight, I think then that we'll have to change our ideas of what is an ideal body mass index. It's an odd thing. Like I said, I would ask everyone to try to maintain a healthy diet as best you can, certainly to exercise as much as you can, but it is, for me, it's a little bit reassuring that just extremely thin body mass index, 21, 22, which I will never in the remainder of my life ever achieve, doesn't necessarily have the highest outcomes anymore, which is nice. Wall Street Journal, May 10th.
Okay.
The word healthy.
Was in there 77 times.
It would seem like the word healthy, we would all say, okay, there's no controversy about the word healthy. The FDA is going to reevaluate its definition of the word healthy.
Really?
It is.
So, yeah, what is it going to mean?
Well, right now what it means is kind of interesting. Healthy means low in fat, fortified with vitamins, so Pop-Tarts are
not. They are.
Pop, yeah, they're low fat.
because that's good. All, you know, I like Pop-Tarts.
And they're not marketed as being healthy, but they are, in fact, they meet the FDA definition of healthy because they don't have much fat. Now, here's what happened. There was a company named Kind, they made fruit and nut bars. And they said, well, these are healthy fruit and nut bars. And the FDA sent them a warning letter, said, look, you have high saturated fats in your fruit and nut bars. And the Kind people said, it's the nuts. Nuts have fat. Nuts are good for you.
Well, they have fat.
But they have fat, but they have good, healthy fats. We now know that. We've gotten away from focusing so much on fats and cholesterol. We realize that there are good, healthy fats, and nuts are a wonderful thing, too.
So you're saying I'm okay having dark chocolate and peanut butter, right? So I can do the peanut butter.
How did this conversation get to your dark chocolate? Where did this come from?
And peanut butter is a nut.
You just gave me license to have... Sometimes you don't listen. That's what frustrates me.
I don't think it's the fact that you've got your own agenda.
And that's where it goes.
I think I'm way ahead of you.
All right, back to these people. It turns out
they're nuts.
Their nuts are healthy. FDA's rules, actually, under these FDA rules, avocados and salmon are not healthy.
Well,
fat levels.
Okay, great.
Yeah. While fat-free pudding and sugary cereal, Frosted Flakes, for instance.
That's what's wrong with America. Right there.
That's healthy. I mean, again, no one marketing Frosted Flakes is healthy, but Frosted Flakes meet the FDA
definition
of healthy.
Anything isn't healthy.
Salmon, no. Frosted Flakes, sure. Pop-Tarts, yes. Avocados, no. This is our problem because we focus so much on fats that the FDA said you can't have fat and be healthy. So FDA told the company, they said, okay, you can put healthy and tasty, and this is great. The FDA, you never win with the FDA. FDA said, okay, we're allowing your use of the phrase as a corporate philosophy rather than a nutrition frame. You can say it's healthy because your corporation has a philosophy of healthiness. That place. Now, the FDA did say, well, now, not all foods that meet the criteria for healthy are healthy, and those who are not meeting the criteria for healthy are not necessarily unhealthy. So, thank you, FDA, for recognizing that salmon is not necessarily unhealthy. Good job. The problem is, FDA, they move, this is a very slow thing. It takes them a long time. Last month, the House of Representatives said in a report accompanying its agriculture appropriations bill, they expect the FDA to amend its regulation for healthy. So FDA's final rule on gluten-free labeling, that was more than 6 years. So the FDA is now will be taking public comments on what is healthy.
What are we going to send them? A BMI of 30?
Apparently, you want to send them some kind of a Reese's cup, essentially a chocolate peanut butter
thing. I think
they
make a dark chocolate Reese's cup, and we're in business.
Yeah, and you say, please make this healthy, and then, by the way, can you do something about that BMI thing?
Yeah, I need dark chocolate Reese's cups and a BMI of 35, and I'm good.
There you go. We'll petition. Here's what we do. We're petitioning the FDA to make Rick healthy. That's the thing. Okay. Rick is declared healthy by the FDA.
I don't think they're going to get that. I just don't think that's going to happen. I'm going to be better off because, I mean, you can argue the dark chocolate's, you know, the bitter dark chocolate's good for you.
Yeah. Well, what's odd, I think, you know, first of all, the avocado.
It's just not in 3 pounds at a time.
You think about the Florida grapefruit people and how hard they
fought against health matters?
Yeah.
They hated us.
Yeah. So why did the avocado not fight the FDA unhealthy thing? I don't know. And the salmon people, where were they? It took the nut people.
Boy, I hope you didn't come into this conversation late.
There we go. All right. So once again, health matters. We're down in the eighth grade level.
It's been a long recording.
But it took them to finally back the FDA down on this. Speaking of that, one final thing.
You got time.
Okay.
You got 2 or 3 minutes.
This was published 20th of April, 2016. Came out of the Nutritional Epidemiology Institute in Tianjin, China. And I'm sure I butchered that. And it is about nut consumption and symptoms of depression. They said, well, look, nuts have micronutrients, macronutrients. They're really good. So they looked at the relationship in 13,000 people about how much nuts you ate and whether or not you were nut, whether you're depressed. Let's be more specific. If you eat nuts 1 to 3 times a week, your risk of depression drops by 18%. That was statistically significant.
Okay.
So nuts are good for physical health. They are on their way to becoming FDA healthy, and they also may assist with mental health. Sort of like
health matters, wouldn't you say, Rick?
I guess we could say that.
All right. Can you get us off the air?
I probably can do that. I've done that about 650 times.
I'm counting on you.
Special thanks to Morehead State Public Radio producer Hunter Reese. Adios, Hunter. And to Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song. And to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to our show, go to WMKY.org or visit us on Facebook. Just do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. This story about our producer, Hunter Reese. Happy trails to you as you leave for North Carolina for the summer. First of all, I've got to tell you, let's just go ahead and announce it. This is a very bad philosophy joke in honor of our student producer. Hunter was feeling nervous, about to go on his first date, so he went to his father for advice, and his father told him, he said, "Hunter, my son, there are three subjects that always work with women: food, family, and philosophy. We call those the three F's." Food, family, and philosophy. So he picks up his date. They stare at each other for a long time. There is no conversation going on. There's nervousness built, but he remembers his father's advice. And so he says to the girl, he says, "Do you like pancakes?" She says, "No." That's it. Food, in fact, didn't work. So he goes to the second F, family. And he says, "Well, do you have a brother?" She says, "No." He's down to his last F, which is philosophy. So he says, "If you had a brother, would he like pancakes?" That's a terrible joke. I got to tell you, whatever you do, do not take this stuff lying down.
Thank you,
this
Hunter.
Week. Make a healthy change in your life and tune in next week as we explain how to keep the Aedes aegypti mosquitoes off your skin on your Hyde and Zika show on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.